Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay.
And welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. My name is host Mike Joko. Matt and Jess are joining me on a wonderful day of testing here at Circuit of the Americas. Guys, how are we?
Good.
Fantastic.
All right. We are going to go through a lot today. COTA, some driver news, a couple announcements, and the new IndyCar app. And let's see where tonight takes us. So I will turn it over to Matt and we'll get rolling here.
Oh, man. Yesterday, which is Monday, because this week we're recording on a Tuesday right after the COTA test, the first day of it, was a crazy day on social media. For those who missed it, Pato O'Ward is no longer at Harding Steinbrenner Racing after the two have agreed to mutually part ways. There is speculation in the air as to what led to this. The biggest rumor/conjecture is because of financial reasons, in that Harding has not found the funding for that car yet for the season, and Pato has growing concerns about if he's actually going to make it for the full season. So he wanted to utilize his $1 million he got for the Indy Lights Championship and bring it elsewhere. Also sounds like they didn't even have an engine either for that car, which is kind of shocking. So now he does have his 3-race deal as far as the money for it. He just now has to find a team to race for, and that is not an easy thing to do with the season being 1 month away and Indy being something around 100 days away. Jess, what do you think?
I think that he's got an uphill battle for sure. I think that having the money from winning the championship last year will, you know, put him leaps and bounds in front of some of the other people who are still kind of duking it out for these part-time seats. I did read one thing interesting. Robin Miller wrote it saying that Steinbrenner was responsible for getting Herta's sponsorship money taken care of, and Harding was responsible for Pato. I hadn't read that or heard that previously, so I don't know if maybe there was just kind of a communication breakdown, but it'll be interesting to see what all really plays out. And I think, you know, Pato's got an amazing talent, so I think that he will still find a decent ride for his races, but man, what a tough way to start the season.
Yeah, Jess, that last sentence is very true. I mean, it really stinks. You know, we're 26 days away from the start of the regular season here, and this unfortunately happens. And I think we're all gutted for Pato. He's a good kid, and he's going to be a very good driver. And like I said to him, you know, something good will happen, and it might not be a full season this year, but he will still wow everybody in whatever races he gets. And, you know, come 2020 or maybe some length of time this year, he'll be able to show that and build on it for the future. But definitely a crappy situation.
You know, how many 400-pound blocks of cheeses do we need to sell to get him a full season? We should maybe get on that.
Honestly,
right away.
Probably not that many, because I've seen some things on like Amazon with obviously smaller than 400-pound blocks, but large blocks of cheese, and they're like ridiculously expensive. Like, who knew?
So every time we have a guest on, you're just throwing away money? We don't have
like
all this
lot.
Money. Oh, man, Jess.
I'm throwing away a lot of money, actually.
If you are interested in becoming the Pit Lane Parlay accountant, just message Mike and we can sort this out and make sure that we don't throw away all our money buying cheese wheels. But anyways, yeah, so really hope he finds the funding. It sounds like he's been talking to just about every major business in Mexico for some backing, which is surprising to me because it seems like a lot of the Mexican drivers we've seen in recent memory, like Adrian Fernandez, Sergio Perez, and other junior formula drivers, they all seem to be consistently sponsored kind of by the same sponsors. And for Pato, who's super successful, it's kind of frustrating to see that he can't find that backing like others can. And I guess my next question for you guys, and we can start with Mike on this one, is what is this? And I'm not trying to brag, because I may have predicted that Carlin would be the best improving team for this season. And so far in testing, they've actually looked like they've done a pretty good job this offseason. What does this do for Harding for the rest of the season? Because I know a lot of people were high on them for the season. Is this going to set them back negatively? Or what are your kind of thoughts about the team after this announcement, Mike?
So I think they'll still improve versus last year. You know, obviously they announced that technical alliance with Andretti today, so that's really going to help. And if today is any evidence of a, you know, how they're going to do this year, and I know you can't base it solely based on testing, but Colton Herta had a very good day both this morning and this afternoon, and I'm pretty sure he led both sessions.
Yes.
Yeah. So will they finish as high in the standings? Probably not, but I still think they're going to improve. You know, the technical alliance with Andretti to get them, you know, the newer dampers is really going to pay off for them this year.
I think you basically nailed it. I mean, the technical alliance is going to do good things. I mean, again, like I said before, we'll see how much actual information they get. So it may be kind of hit or miss at some locations. But that's going to help them. And then obviously today, Colton had a very, very good day. So I don't think that we should necessarily, you know, sweep them under the rug just because they had a little hiccup.
And to touch on what Jess said, I think Colton Herta is actually the biggest winner out of this. Now he doesn't have this benchmark to kind of compare himself to all season. He also gets the technical alliance with Andretti Autosport, which he can utilize some pretty good talent on that side to help him out. And based on today, good start. I always say it's just practice. You never really know until, I don't know, four or five races into the season. That kind of gives you a good picture of what is going to look like for the rest of the year. But for now, it looks like, I don't know. We'll see. I guess we'll see how he does on the ovals. I guess that's where I'm primarily concerned about this team, is seeing how well they do on ovals and whatnot. But since we've kind of touched on it, we'll move on to these. Oh, one more thing. What did you guys think of Santi Urrutia's tweet? I know Mike is a devout follower. So what did you think of that?
Oh, man. Listen, I get his frustration. I don't know if it's true or not. I don't think it's really a good look for Santi if he's still trying to find some funding for an open wheel seat, because now team owners are going to go, well, if something doesn't work with this guy, now I'm going to get thrown under the bus. Whether he's right or he's wrong, probably not I don't think it's the right move.
Jess?
Okay, so my thinking here is, I mean, there are times when you just really need to keep your thoughts to yourself. And frankly, this is one of those times. I can't imagine that anybody would look at this and not think, oh, wow, that's bad. So I just think he should have, you know, kept his thoughts to himself and maybe contacted Pato in private and said, hey, you know what, man, this is rough, but you're not alone or something.
You know, as a future Indy 500 winner, I think Santi can pretty much tweet whatever he wants. And that's sarcasm if you didn't catch that at home. Nope. Mike, anything to add on that?
Yeah, just one quick comment. I know our pals at openwheels.com spoke with Santi today about his comments, and he kind of elaborated on it earlier. So go check out their article. It's a good read. Kind of Santi goes a little bit further than just the tweet, if you're curious. Still don't think you should have said it, but Tanner and crew did a great job writing everything up.
And I believe that's open_wheels on Twitter, correct?
I think so.
Okay, perfect. Great job, guys. We appreciate all their efforts, and they do a good job there. One quick thing to touch on, a little breaking news on today, Tuesday, that Pruitt Racer brought in here, is that the second entry, even though it's not going to be driven by Pato O'Ward at Harding, is actually still available. Team president Brian Barnhart said that they were open to running the second car at the Speedway, which is the Indy 500. They just want to be smart about it, quote unquote. So just something to kind of throw in there before we completely move on here. And as promised, now we are finally at the COTA test. So thanks for your guys' patience on that one. But no major incidents today. I think Kyle Kaiser had a red flag just on his warm-up lap, so obviously a mechanical issue there. But there's two sessions today, Tuesday, and then there's a couple more tomorrow, Wednesday. So if you just follow our Twitter account, we'll just keep you guys updated there. Or if you just want to rewind a couple days from the week, you'll see what happened. But today, Tuesday, we can discuss a little bit. Obviously, the biggest surprise, as we touched on, was that Colton Herta was number one in both sessions. The first session, the top 10 we'll go with was Erickson, Newgarden, Enerson, Veach, Andretti, Dixon, Piggott, Rossi, and Chilton. And the second session was, again, Herta with Power, Castro Neves, who isn't full-time this year, but as Penske likes to do, he gets an extra driver to test some setups and whatnot. But Castro Neves was third. Rosenquist, Dixon, Pagano, Rossi, Rahal, Ferrucci, and Piggott. The circuit looked pretty good, not going to lie. Obviously, Indy cars are much slower than Formula One cars, but that was very much expected. But overall, the facility looks really good on the cameras. I think we'll start with Mike on this one since he's on the ground there. Overall thoughts from the day and anything stand out to you on the timing scoring sheets?
Yeah, so first off, this place is beautiful. If you get a chance to come down here, it's really a nice facility and very easy to get lost when you're in an Uber trying to find your way to the media center at 7 in the morning. But overall, I mean, I'm surprised to see, you know, Herta at the top. Like I said, not that he's a bad driver, but, you know, he was a second and a half ish quicker than Will Power in the second session, where, you know, the temperatures were up, track was rubbered in a little bit. You know, outside of Kyle Kaiser, I think Matthias Laist spun coming out of a corner. I don't remember exactly. And somebody else was slow for a quick second, but really it was an uneventful from a, you know, accident sort of day, which is a good thing. The cars raced even a little bit quicker than I expected, you know, within that 10 second window of F1 roughly. So I was happy to see that. And, you know, I think the biggest takeaway for me from today is drivers up and down the paddock saying in about two laps, your tires are hurting. So that's should be interesting come race day and how guys manage tires. And they were only on the black tires today.
The video I watched, I did get to see a little bit of the morning session, but not very much of it. The afternoon session, I got to watch maybe 40 minutes or so. The video makes it look amazing. I really wish I could be there with you. Unfortunately, you know, that whole work thing has kept me away. But it looks amazing. I definitely can't wait for the race. And like you said, the tire degradation is going to be really interesting to see what happens there. I'm sure the softer compounds are going to be quite the beast to drive on.
I still hope that everybody is right and that we get a good race there. I think the run up to turn one is going to be excellent on that first lap, especially with a running start there. But yeah, man, I think Colton is going to be kind of a hot subject there when it comes to picking him in fantasy. I think he's going to be a pretty popular driver when it comes that weekend based off of this. I do want to give a special shout out to Felix Rosenquist, who was 12th in the first session and 4th in the second session. Coming off to me as advertised, so far, and we'll kind of touch on that when we get to Laguna Seca. Kind of on the negative side, I don't know if you guys have the results in front of you, but on the negative side, it wasn't the best day for Tony Kanaan. 24th in the first session, only because Kaiser did not get any attempts, any full laps there in the first session, and then dead stone last in the second session. He was 4.4 seconds off first place, and he was 1.2 seconds off of Kaiser in the Juncos. Might be more to the story. Maybe I'm just reading into it. And I myself say that it's just practice. Actually looking at it a little further, he only did 6 laps in the second session. So I'm assuming something was amiss there.
Yeah.
Gotta be. There's no other explanation for being that poor in that session.
Yeah, let me, if I may, Kanaan had some sort of engine trouble in the morning. I don't think he ran too many laps this morning either. And then this afternoon, whatever issue he had popped back up, and he ran his 6 laps pretty early, and then he was done for the day by, you know, within the first hour of the afternoon session.
despite that, I'm still going to stick with it. Unimpressed, Kanaan. Get it together. Move on. All right. moving on. We'll just no time for logic here. All right. Moving on. We will touch on the Laguna Seca test as well. It was the IndyCar's first official session there since, I believe, 2004 is when Champ Cars were there last. Speaking of beautiful, oh my goodness, what an amazing track. Like I said, whenever this was announced, I don't care if Laguna Seca puts on the most boring race of the year. At least it's going to be more enjoyable to watch drivers hustle around that track than it would Sonoma, which was also a boring race. Cars were a bit slower than the old kart and Champ Car days. Obviously, I think that comes down to either the lack of downforce or the lack of engine power. But however, before I get to the top 10 on that session, just a special shout out to the IndyCar photographers, including our very own Patreon subscriber, not the author, Stephen King, who had some epic shots that was pretty much shared by every driver on Instagram. So good job, Stephen. Just some brilliant work there. But the photographers in general, Joe Skibinski and Chris Owens, I believe, were also there. Just a great job of capturing these beautiful cars at a beautiful circuit. The top 10 for the day, surprisingly, which I did a silent fist pump for, was Max Chilton in the Carlin car. Telling you guys, I might be onto something here. Second, like I touched on with today's results at COTA, was Felix Rosenquist. Just brilliant in his first official session. I know he's done a couple laps at Sebring. Followed by Hunter Ray, Jack Harvey, Rossi, Enerson, Veach, Dixon, Pagenaud, and Piggott. Kind of a two-prong question. We'll start with prong number one here. What did you guys think of the results there? Anything to read into? Any surprises that stand out to you, Jess?
I wouldn't say any surprises necessarily, but it is good to see Piggott doing well in both locations. Obviously, you know, can't stress enough how much that team really needs some good results this year.
Yeah, I think Jess hit the nail on the head there. You know, Piggott consistent, you know, today and last week, and great to see Max Chilton, and I think RC Enerson did pretty well in Laguna and had a good day today. So to see Carlin kind of more consistent proves to Matt's point that maybe they will be the most improved team, as much as I don't want to admit that. But the one thing I will say is the livery that Max Chilton debuted in Laguna and again this week is perhaps my favorite in a number of years.
Are you jumping ahead on the rundown?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. I didn't know it was there.
Unreal. No, that's all right. And so also, I want to give a special shout out too to Harvey, P4. That's pretty brilliant. And then Enerson also at P6 in what was one of his limited sessions back in an IndyCar. He was back at Circuit of the Americas in January, I think, or December. But yeah, you know, obviously he's not a fluke, I don't think, at least on the natural terrain road courses. It remains to be seen elsewhere. But Mike, what was your favorite livery at the test, if you want to oblige us?
Max Chilton, not even
right,
close.
Perfect. Look at that. I had no idea.
Surprising, I know.
I'm going to go with that Santino Ferrucci Chrome. Holy cow. I think that looks so good.
And with the red mirrors and the red helmet, oof, it looks really good. I'm also going to say Chilton. I was just raving about it on social media. It is just a knockout. It just works for me. Perfect, iconic, brilliant. Honorable mention to Zach Veach's car, which I think also looks excellent. The black, yellow, and blue Gainbridge car. That definitely also works for me. I don't know if you guys got a chance to look at all the others. And so we'll say, other than the plain testing liveries, so ignore like Enerson and maybe like Ed Jones, who just has a plain black car. Any of them stand out to you as looking pretty hideous?
Oh boy. I don't think so. You're jogging my memory that, you know, I was just out on the racetrack 5 minutes ago and I already forget.
I can go first if you want me to.
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't like the new Jack Harvey car. I think the pink chrome worked a lot better than the solid pink. That's my two cents on that.
Yeah, it's funny. I thought I would like that car in person more than I do, and I didn't think I would like the Hinchcliffe matte gold and matte black style car, and I like that much better in person than I did seeing it on the internet. So I guess I'll kind of agree with you.
Jess?
I'm going to save mine until St. Pete because I just want to see them in person. They always look different in person.
You can just say Scott Dixon now and get it over with.
Well, I mean, no, because I don't want to pick the same one I always pick.
They didn't change it. They must not have listened to you, those idiots. All right. We'll toss it over to Mike for a first round of Patreon shout-outs. Yeah,
first round of Patreon shout-outs tonight. Let's start with the newest one. Thank you, Mike Silver. Look forward to seeing you down in St. Pete. Stephen King, great meeting you earlier today and getting to talk for a couple minutes. Mr. Mike Knapp, who I will also see in St. Pete. And let's do it with another mic, Mr. Michael Goodyear. Thank you guys very much for listening and your support, and should have some new Patreon content pretty soon.
You sound like a pretty popular guy there, Mike.
Can I just throw this out there?
Yeah.
I think we should have a cheese party at St. Pete.
Let's make it happen. We need somebody with a house or like a boat. We can have a boat.
I was going to say, let's ask our accountant how much money we have in reserve to rent a yacht for the weekend.
All right. I'm on it.
All right. Perfect.
Sounds good.
And again, if you're interested in being our accountant, just message Mike and we'll get that sorted out. All right. Moving on, a pretty critical piece of news was announced this week in the continued Jay Fry excellence of leadership or something. More consistency, basically, just making sure all the key factors in IndyCar are locked down long term. And so this one was Firestone. Firestone was announced to have signed a new extension with IndyCar until 2025. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on that other than say it's great news for IndyCar.
Yay. I'm going to pull a Jess. Yay.
Money.
Yay, money.
You forgot that part.
Yay,
money.
Teamwork.
Yeah, teamwork. So good job, Jay Fry and company. The second bit of news here was that with Kyle Kaiser, obviously he was at the Circuit of the Americas test. He was also at the Laguna Seca test. He'll be on track tomorrow, Wednesday as well. And the only sort of announcement we got from Yukos about the actual season was that Kaiser would be driving at the Circuit of Americas, which makes sense because he is testing there and getting familiar. So we will see Kaiser on a track near you. And finally, with Toyota Grand Prix of Long Beach is no more. Obviously, the announcement came from Honda and IndyCar that it was actually going to be Acura who sponsors the Grand Prix of Long Beach. So it's going to be the Acura Grand Prix of Long Beach. The only thing I have to add to that before I toss to you guys is I hope that Acura and or Honda find a way to bring the celebrity race back, the celebrity pro-am race that raised money for charity and all these, you know, retired drivers, maybe like a Paul Tracy or back in the day like a Scott Pruitt, Derek Daly and whatnot, would race along with celebrities from kind of the Hollywood area and whatnot on the track. And it would be just a hoot of a time. And I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on that in general.
Yeah, that would be awesome. That was always fun to watch on TV.
Agreed. It was a lot of fun and it brought a lot of attention. So the more the merrier.
Perfect. Moving on. The much anticipated announcement of NBC Gold as far as the new IndyCar team is concerned. It did come out and we got a little bit of info on what the prices will be as well as all of the kind of features you'll get if you do purchase the package. The discounted rate right now is $50 until the end of February, so I would definitely pounce on that while you can. It would go up to $55 after February. If you are an IndyCar Downforce member, is that what they're called? IndyCar Nation?
IndyCar Nation.
IndyCar Nation. If you're an IndyCar Nation member, you actually get an extra discount, so it actually goes down to $45. Just check your email if you haven't already. The features include special behind-the-scenes footage, live footage of practice and qualifying, full past races from past seasons, extended Indy 500 coverage, and more. So let me translate that to you guys. If you're expecting IndyCar to stream the qualifying and practice sessions on YouTube like years past, I would highly advise you to get this because that is probably not going to be a thing this year. And the NBC sports team, it sounds like, will be actually doing all the practices and qualifying. So like Diffie, Tracy, and Bell. So it sounds like it's going to be pretty high quality. I don't know if you guys have thoughts on that as a whole. We can start with Jess on this one.
I think it's a great value. I mean, it's not overpriced. I think the majority of people can find a way to afford it if they want to. Obviously, a lot of it's still going to be on TV, so people can still view it on TV, but this just adds extra. And if you're a big fan and you want to watch the extra, I think it's a great value.
Yeah, I think, you know, what comes down to it, so it's $50 for the year, so what's, you know, a couple dollars a month. And if you break that down further, it's like 10 cents a session for each practice and qualifying, et cetera, et cetera. So the people who are super frustrated just need to relax a little bit. It's really, you know, if you're getting broadcast value to practices and everything now, that's that, you know, that's NBC bringing more to the table than anything in years past. So I will be subscribing, even though I'll probably be at a racetrack more often than not. But it's definitely, you know, with all the extra Indy 500 coverage and whatnot, it's going to be a pretty cool package to get.
And if anybody at home is complaining about the money or whatnot, if you send Jess a message on Twitter, she will cut you off a 10-pound piece of cheese from her cheese wheel and send it to you so you can sell that for the money to buy this package. Does that sound like a plan to everybody?
Roughly 10 pounds.
Roughly 10 pounds. It might be 50. We won't know until we get to the post office, but, you know, whatever. All right. we will toss it over to Mike.
Yeah, real quick, thank you to sponsor Apex Pro. That was Andrew, who we had on 2 weeks ago, I believe, at the beginning of the episode. Just a quick read here. Apex Pro, the ultimate driver modification for racing, autocross, and high-performance driving events. It's powerful, cost-effective data acquisition hardware pairs to the free Apex app that you can get in the Apple App Store for free. The hardware itself is $450 and delivers powerful data right to your fingertips with no wiring or complex installation required. So again, look for Apex Pro in the App Store. Go to apextrackcoach.com. And if you put in the code PitLaneParlay, you get 50% off. So it ends up just being a little over $220, which is an awesome deal for some cool software. So again, apextrackcoach.com. And we will continue on with the episode.
We'll throw it right over to Jess as she attempts to stump the hosts.
Okay, so you know that my stump the hosts are typically out of left field. So today I decided to come up with a question that kind of ties into the questions that I ask our guests when they're on. So I always ask the guests what their spirit animal is. So today my question has to do with animals at Indianapolis.
Again,
this one's totally different. So this one I was going for, has an animal ever stopped a race or any other kind of racing event, we'll say?
Yes.
At Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Oh, and let me preface this by saying, not a yellow flag, not like after somebody hit an animal and whatever, like if an animal got on the track and everything was red flagged, that's what I was looking for. Has that ever happened and when?
I can't stop laughing over here because Mike can never like stay quiet enough for the person to finish.
I was so excited. You know what the sad thing is? I was really excited because I didn't think she was going to say Indianapolis, and then she did, and I went, "Oh."
Because
but I had already prefaced it by saying this is about animals at Indianapolis, you know, so I don't know why you.
And I am just going to throw in the white flag here and go, I don't know the answer.
Well, I'm assuming okay. She didn't go through all that trouble of explaining it if the answer wasn't yes.
It wouldn't shock me.
Actually, he does have a good point.
She's not going to be like, haha, guys, just kidding. It's a no. And I
just like,
after I go on like a 5-minute rant saying it was a giraffe or something.
Okay, so you're right. The answer is yes. I did find one instance, at least, of an animal stopping track activity. Do you want to take a stab in the dark of when it was?
1927.
No, it was actually way more recent than that.
What?
In fact, it was just on May 1st of 2018.
Is that when Alonzo?
There was no. I just said, man, you don't listen.
We know that.
No.
Hey, break it up, you two.
Anyways, no, it was not when Alonzo hit the bird. In fact, I didn't even yellow flag for that, so that wouldn't have even been anything.
And Alonzo wasn't there in 2018.
Correct. Also that. But anyways, they actually red flagged an open test in order to get a gaggle of geese off of the track. And they did, the IMS maintenance crew saved the geese, and they were all good. That's the only one that I found. I'm sure it's probably not the only one, but that is the only one that I found when it actually stopped on track activity. I have seen it be yellow flagged after somebody's hit an animal or something like that, but never where they actually stopped it and then they did save the animal. So that's, yay for those geese.
Well, I'm sure that's like a Jay Fry policy, right? That sounds like something Jay Fry would do. Just, he's always out for the animals, you know, if animals on the track or whatever, yellow flag, red flag. That just seems like something Jay Fry would do. What did Montoya, one of the Aero Kit years, like he went out for his first qualifying run and there was something on his car. Wasn't it like a dead finch or – no, just kidding. It was a garbage bag. I'm sorry.
Bird, garbage bag.
I was going to say the only bird I recall recently was the Alonzo bird. Birds, plural. It was two birds, and like I said, they didn't even yellow flag it for that. He just got a nice little decal of birds on the side of his car.
Garbage bag, bird, tomato, tomato. All right. Well, I guess Jess couldn't stump me on a yes/no answer, so I got her this week. Moving on to some more news here. Surfers Paradise is still working with IndyCar on finalizing a date to return to Australia next season. It seems like we constantly report on this one, and it doesn't sound like anything ever changes. It's kind of just more of an update that they're still working on it. Of course, to remind you, IndyCar would love to have something in February or March. However, Surfers Paradise hosts a Supercars race there in October, along with some other series, I believe. So maybe at an impasse, but it sounds like both sides are super enthusiastic about having the IndyCars return. There was a news program in Australia that ran a short segment on it. I think the anchor said that the cost of running the IndyCar race between 91 and 2008 was around $40 to $50 million, and then the return on investment as far as like the economic growth and money spent around the area because of the IndyCars being there was somewhere in the hundreds of millions. So that to me seems like it might be a good idea, but you know, it's a different time and all that good stuff. But I don't know if you guys have any thoughts about the non-news that we got about the events from IndyCar this week.
I think it's good that they are still talking positively and there's, you know, they want to come to some sort of conclusion. So I'm hopeful. I feel like at this point we're cutting it pretty close for 2020 and everything that needs to be involved for a, an international race like that. But even if it's 2021, I think we're still headed in the right direction with that one.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to pull it up right now. I thought I read an article today that said that IndyCar, Surfers Paradise, and Supercars are actually trying to work together to I thought it was a one weekend deal. I'm trying to find the article right now. I'm so sorry.
I do remember that.
I can't seem to find the article, but I did see it, and it was just today that they came out with it. So I mean, if that's kind of the way they're going, that would be great. I think it would be really fun for the fans there to have, you know, the Supercars and IndyCar together. I mean, heck, that would be fun for me. I just found it. Yeah. So they are trying to...
I think the one thing that's interesting in there is that, I think it's about two-thirds of the way through the article, is February is some sort of school holiday in Australia and they don't want to schedule the race to be the same time as the school holiday to, you know, shut down traffic and whatnot. So I know they've still got some work to do. But yeah, I think it'll happen. I don't know if Jess has any additional thoughts as she scrolls through the article.
So I did find that article. It is on motorsport.com. And it is saying that the supercars and IndyCar are trying to get a date together so that they would be there together. It'd be great for the fans. It doesn't look like they have set any kind of time frame really on when they're looking, if they're looking in the fall or in the spring. But man, that would be fun. That would be a lot of fun to see those two together.
I need to start saving to figure out how I can afford to get there.
Huh. I just can't believe that there's series working together for once. I mean, here in America, IndyCar and NASCAR pretty much hate each other, and I've never thought the idea that they would work together. So to see that IndyCars and supercars are like, you know, hey, let's meet up and do something about this. That's cool to me. Like, I appreciate that. And I hope that, you know, if supercars ever wanted to come over and race at Long Beach, then IndyCar would be like, hey, yeah, come on, sit down. Let's talk about it. So hopefully good things coming there. Maybe we won't touch on that until we actually have something to report for you guys. Moving on. One of the new IndyCar teams, which is Dragon Speed, have their chassis in their shop. I think it's just actually one, so sorry for the plural there. But they do have the chassis, and they're starting to build it. So hope to see them out in the racetrack soon. I think they do have that 5-race deal, so that's going to be super cool to watch them and see how they do. Nothing more really to add on that one. This is probably the second craziest thing I heard all week other than Pato and Harding splitting up. Tony Donahue, who I might preface that by saying 2 years ago, he tweeted that Marco was going to get fired by Andretti Autosport. And obviously that never happened. So maybe just think about that when I say this part, but Tony Donahue, who is a radio host in Indiana, I believe, or producer or something like that, is reporting a rumor that Eric Bachelart, who owns or used to own Conquest, I think they're still around in the sports car arena.
Looking that up. Continue.
All right. Go ahead and cheat for me. Eric Bachelart, former IndyCar driver and possibly former owner, is looking to field an Indy 500 entry with Oriel Servia. Servia was kind of the favorite to be the Scuderia Corsa driver. However, they've opted to join forces with Eddie Carpenter Racing and Ed Jones as a part-time entry. So now Servia's kind of once again left without a ride. The poor guy's been left without a ride several years, and it seems like he's driven for about 15 different teams. Mike, do we have any updates on if Bachelart is still a current owner in anything?
I can tell you right now that if it is, it is not with Conquest Racing. There is nothing on Conquest Racing since Pippa Mann in 2011.
Anything in IMSA, does it say there?
I'll get back to you on that one. Keep right. Going.
Perfect. Well, in case they aren't existent anymore, maybe they can change their name to Concord Racing. But, Jess, any thoughts about this out-of-left-field rumor?
Not to be super rude, but everything that he proposes as a rumor, I take with a grain of salt. Because he said a lot of things, not just the Marco thing, but a lot of things that are really left field and really not true. So I kind of just take it with a grain of salt and move about my day. I can't really see it coming to fruition, but we'll see.
I think Jess and I have laughed about some of Tony's things many times in the previous year and a half or so. So we shall see. I hope it works out for Servia. And to answer the original question, yes, he does. He is the co-owner of Quest Racing in IMSA. That's what was throwing me off because I was searching for Conquest Racing, but it's just Quest Racing now.
Why did they do that?
Because they wanted to ruin your dad joke of Concord Racing or whatever you said a couple minutes ago.
Don't hate on my dad jokes, okay?
I know. There are many people on social media that would love your dad joke, but I am going to make fun of it.
I guarantee there's at least two whole people out there who may have somewhat exhaled in a different manner at that joke.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure there are. I know a lot of people love dad jokes.
And to Jess's comment about Tony, didn't Marco end up getting fired? Oh, no, he didn't. Did he?
No, I don't think he did.
God, we should have started this podcast like 4 years ago. We would have had so much fun back in the day. Imagine us doing this podcast when Jay Fry wasn't in charge. Oh, it would be a hoot.
Oh.
We would be just taking cheap shots at IndyCar all day. But now we don't really have anything negative to say about him. For now, knock on wood. Round two of Patreon. Go ahead, Mike.
All right. So thank you to our buddy George. Looking forward to seeing you as well in St. Pete. Thank you again, Jason Camps. Jason's the one who put us in contact with Apex track coach and Andrew Raines there, Matt Grunholz, and last but not least, we have two more, Colin Taylor, and we'll save the Packers fan for last in Mr. David Lighting.
Moving on, IndyCar, if you have the old app of the IndyCar app and haven't updated the app yet, I would recommend going to the App Store and getting that app updated so you get the new IndyCar app. Whew, nailed it. Just in case you guys are wondering, they did update it. So if you haven't yet, please go update it. It's got some cool new features, and fingers crossed, hopefully we can listen. All of us non-Verizon people can now listen to the radios and whatnot for different sessions. I really hope so. I really, 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 really want to listen to Marco Andretti chew someone out with a bunch of slew of curse words this year. So hopefully that happens. I don't know if you guys, there's probably nothing to add to that, is there?
The only thing I want to add is, and I've only used the app for about 25 seconds as you were saying that, I realized I had the updated version. It loads much quicker, which is a big deal to many of us who are running around trying to use the app on the fly. So whatever NTT and IndyCar did to make the app better, they did a good job so far. I think we can move on to the next topic.
Perfect. So the next topic, and actually I forgot to touch on the Indy Lights portion of today's test Tuesday at Circuit of the Americas. They also were on track for two sessions. I'm looking at the combined results here, and a surprising out of left field entry in today was actually Oliver Askew, who did race / test today with Andretti Autosport. I do believe somebody out there on social media says don't read too much into this yet because they don't have anything signed for the season quite yet. However, Askew was on track and was the combined fastest driver on the day. Great to see Carlin back out there. That really made my day to see Carlin having, I believe, two drivers out there, now, including Logan Sargeant, who I think is going to be a name to keep an eye on. They also had Dalton Kellett. If you're at a track near me, get me two beers, and I'll happily rant about Dalton Kellett for 15 minutes. Couple other names on there. Clayman DeMello was out there, who I don't know if he changed his name, but is on as Zachary Clayman on the test results sheet. I don't know if something's going on there. Or it's like, you know, Elio Castro Neves used to be Elio Castro - Neves, and then he got tired of people calling him Elio Castro, so he dropped the dash. Like, that's no joke. That's like a legitimate. I'm not even making that up. That was legitimate.
I remember that.
Yeah, they announced that one of his first, I think it was his first year at Penske, they announced that Paul Page said something in a broadcast about him dropping the dash. Rinus VK was out there. I'm going to be honest, I never heard of this guy, but Julian Falchero was actually fast in both sessions. Maybe a name to keep an eye on. Sorry, Julian. I guess I didn't know a whole lot about you until today, but, you know, best of luck next year. And then Lucas Cole also announced a deal with Ballardi Autosport to be in that entry for the team for the entire season. I'm sorry, is it Ballardi Racing? Did I say that wrong?
I think so, but it's okay. No, we
it's hard to, sometimes hard to keep track of all these teams.
Yeah.
But anyway, so Cole joins Clayman. Yeah, is it Clayman DeMello? I'm just gonna keep saying Clayman DeMello. He joins Clayman DeMello. So I don't know if you guys had a chance to look at that or if you had any thoughts on the Indy Lights portion of the day. Mike, we can start with you.
Sure. I was surprised to see Oliver here this morning. He had a great day, so I hope it leads to something. You know, he was just in a plain black car today, so, you know, tough, you know, like you said, to read too much into it. And I did talk to Steve Wittick, who's kind of like a road to Indy guru with who's going where, and he didn't know Oliver was going to be here until today. So I guess we'll find out on that one. Lucas Cole is, I think I said this to you guys whenever the news came out, I know it's probably all about the money, but he raced in USF 2000 for 3 years and makes the jump right to Indy Lights and then damaged his gearbox in the first couple laps he raced this morning or practiced this morning. So I don't know if it's the best teammate for a championship contender in Klammen-DeMello, but I guess we'll see. I hope he proves me wrong, but I'm not expecting a lot right now.
I mean, you pretty much summed it up right there. That's a pretty big jump, and I mean, I'm not going to say that you can't do it because obviously you can, but I think that he has a steep learning curve. So hopefully he is a quick learner, and hopefully he'll have a better day the next time he's in a car.
Oh God, I think he's going to be trash next year. All right, moving on. We love talking about politics, especially on the show. And if you ever want to hear our political opinion on Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton or Congress, feel free to message us on Twitter and we'll happily tell you to go away. The only time we actually really do talk about politics on here is when it does pertain to IndyCar. And so actually Mark Miles was at the Indiana legislature on behalf of IndyCar and I guess sports in general, lobbying in favor of the legalization of sports gambling in Indiana. For those who don't recall, last year the Supreme Court ruled in favor, saying that states were allowed to mandate if sports gambling was going to be legalized by state. And so now Indiana is in the process of determining if that's a good idea or not. And so Miles was there in favor of it. Before I toss it to Jess, I think the one thing I will say is that if sports gambling was legalized in Indiana, we would see a rush of sports gambling hosting sites like maybe a DraftKings or a FanDuel's or people like that. We would see probably a lot of sponsorship money infused into IndyCar, which I don't think is ever a bad thing as long as it doesn't get too crazy per se. Jess, what are your thoughts about that?
Being from the state of Indiana, I'll just be blunt. I just don't see it happening. Indy is a very conservative, state. They have very few casinos that are not on water because the laws for a casino on water are a lot less strict than the laws for a casino that is on land. So there are very few of them. So I'd say them, you know, kind of, I don't know how to, I guess I can't see Indy coming off of some of their other laws to make it easier to gamble for anyone. I could be totally wrong. They would make a lot of money. And yes, that would come back to IndyCar, so it would be nice, but I don't see it happening for a while, at least.
Yeah, I know Indiana is pretty conservative when it comes to most things, but I do hope it happens. It'd be good money. Probably, you know, every once in a while, you might get a fan who's on, you know, FanDuel or MyBookie or, you know, one of the 8 million apps or websites you can gamble at now and see IndyCar and tune into the race just because they bet some money and, you know, bring in some new fans and TV viewers that way, which would be pretty cool as well. But I think we might be a little bit away from that one happening. I'm not going to say never, but probably not for a year or two.
And I guess maybe my view on it was maybe a little Indiana-centric because if it's widely passed in other states, because obviously while Indiana is the hotbed of IndyCar, they do only host two races. And if you get like, you know, legalization in states like Florida, California, Texas, maybe a couple other Midwestern states, maybe a company like FanDuel will step up and sponsor. I don't know. Maybe that's just wishful thinking, but it does beg a good debate there. And I definitely see where you guys are coming from. I'm not too familiar with the politics in Indiana. There's some Mike Pence guy that I've heard of once or twice, but, you know,
never heard of him.
Yeah. He's the guy that disrupts people from getting in the gates at Indianapolis on race day. But you know, we'll see, I guess. I think it's definitely telling that Mark Miles is there, though. So obviously IndyCar, I guess, is pro-legalization and whatnot. So we're going to take off our political hat and throw on our legal hats, because Derek Daly is suing Wish TV for $25 million in a defamation case. Obviously, this was in result to Daly being fired over... okay, I got to recall this now. He was fired because the Indiana color broadcast commentator on their radio told a story about a driver using a racial profanity, and it got attached that that driver was Derek Daly, so Wish TV fired him, and then Lily Diabetes screwed Connor Daly. Did I get all that right?
You missed the "it was 30 years ago" part.
Oh, sorry. This was also 30 years ago. Now, I'm no legal expert. However, I really think that Wish TV is going to have a tough time with this one. I'm not saying it's going to be $25 million. They'll probably settle on something for like $10 million, but they are going to get taken to the cleaners on this one unless there is something that we are all missing here. Mike, am I missing something?
I want to say yes just to disagree with you, but I think you're 100% right. And like you said, I don't know if it's going to go for $25 million, but the one thing I do know right now is if I can find Connor Daly and I ask him, do you hope your dad wins? He's sure as hell going to say yes, because I'm sure that will help Connor's career as well.
Yeah. I will say, I don't know. You threw out $10 million. I think he's going to get more, honestly. I think Wish TV has an extreme uphill battle in this one, due to many, many factors. One being that it happened, the so-called incident, he said, she said kind of deal happened 30 years ago. Derek wasn't even employed by them 30 years ago. So how can you get fired for something that you did before you were employed for someplace? But it's just, you know, unless there's a video or something of it happening, I've also heard that whoever said it, it was all taken out of context, and I think that has a lot to do with things too. The context of the conversation obviously is going to play into it, but I definitely think that Wish TV is going to lose a lot of money.
And after Derek takes him to cleaners, I hope Connor just takes Lily Diabetes to cleaners too for breach of contract and defamation and all that good stuff. What a freaking joke that was. I don't even know why we brought it up again. just gets me all salty. So we will take off our legal caps, and then once we see some news about that, we'll put those legal caps back on. Moving on, this was actually something we shared 2.5 weeks ago on our Twitter, and I think it's something – I don't know if Mike told me or...
Yeah, I found it late at night.
So I think you just sent it to us and like, wait a second, wasn't this that one thing? So the North American International Auto Show, which was in Detroit from January 13th to 15th, had an outbreak of the German measles. I think it's called rubella. For those who have had measles vaccine or contracted measles before, they're pretty much impervious to it, I think is what Jess was saying to us. The reason we bring this up is this is actually the same show that IndyCar announced their deal with NTT. That was on the January 15th. So if you're at the show and anything suspicious is going on, please get yourself to a doctor. I highly doubt this is going to impact any of you out there, but just in case, if we happen to save one life out there, I think we can go home happy.
This is our PSA for the week.
By the way, can we throw out that this is not likely to kill you, since you just said if we can save one life? So rubella is not likely to kill you.
I thought it was like Ebola in that sense.
Not quite as bad as Ebola, no.
Oh, okay. Well, shows how much I know. I'm not a medical expert. I'm not really like an expert on a whole lot of things. I know that there
I just don't want somebody having like a panic attack because they think that they were exposed and they're going to die now.
Jess is the one who researched it and kind of filled us in that it wasn't really something to panic about. But anyways, I am an expert on animals causing red flags at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. So we got that narrowed down today. So I can take that, and that's fine with me. I'm not a medical expert. That's okay. Shifting gears, we do have some sad news to report. Dr. Robert Hubbard, who is one of the pioneers and inventors in the Hans device, which has saved so many countless lives, tragically passed away this last week. And, you know, we're thoughts or prayers with him and or his family and anybody who was really close with him. One of, if not the, I wouldn't say the most, but one of the biggest racing inventions to drastically increase safety. And even like, you know, some of the smaller crashes that we see nowadays that aren't that big, to my mind, Max Chilton at his first year at Indy went, you know, nose first into the wall at turn two after doing a 360 degree spin. Like that would have been a fatal crash if it wasn't for the Hans device. So just small crashes like that nowadays where a good driver just gets up and walks away. You know, we owe so much to him for keeping our driver safe in situations like those. So really sad to hear that. Mike, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'll just leave it at what you said. Obviously one of the smartest guys to be involved in racing in any way and has saved more lives than we can probably all think of off the top of our heads. So yeah, that's it.
We cannot say enough times how much we appreciate the work that he did. And yeah, all my thoughts and well wishes go out to family and friends.
And I guess a kind of another side story on the introduction of the Hans device, because a lot of drivers were very opposed to it at first because it restricted how far you could look to the left or the right, which really stunk on road courses for what they were accustomed to. And one of the earliest stories of drivers accepting it was, I don't remember if it was Dr. Hubbard himself, but there was an F1 meeting, drivers meeting, where all the drivers were there except for Michael Schumacher, and whoever the presenter was saying, you know, this is the Hans device. It, you know, is going to help you be much safer for front end collisions and things like that. And just keep your neck and head in a forward position. And all the drivers are looking around like, I don't know about that. And Schumacher was actually late to the meeting, shows up and goes, looks at it for like 30 seconds. He says, this is going to make me safer. And they're like, yeah, he's like, I'll take three. And then he walks out the room, and then every driver in the room, like basically Stubbs said, I'll take one too. So I thought that was a super cool story. I remember hearing about the Hans device, and I'm really, really glad it caught on. I know a lot of drivers were against it at first, but it definitely has saved countless lives out there. Mike, do we got any sponsor shout outs to give out this week?
Yeah, one more to go through. Thank you to soundqaudio.com. You can still use the promo code PLPFAN for 35% off your order. I met that guy about a couple hours ago who runs SoundQue. Super cool guy and does some sort of sponsorship, I think, with RC Enerson, or may do some sponsorship work, I should say. So thank you to them. And obviously, check out the show on indiephilly.com, IndieFilly.com. For another place to listen to the show, they will be broadcasting our show Sundays before races, once the season starts. And now we can get to the pitfalls. Matt, you want to go first?
Yeah. So the Advanced Auto Parts, or what is it, AutoZone Clash, or I don't even know what they used to call it. It was always the Budweiser Shootout to me. But the Clash, the NASCAR race, exhibition race before the season at Daytona, where I don't remember what the rules are nowadays. It used to be everybody who got a pole got to race in this thing, or I don't know if it was a win. I don't even know. It's just some stupid thing. It was kind of a charade and whatnot. And then in the closing stages of the race, Jimmy Johnson attempted to make a pass on, I believe, Paul Menard. And from what I saw, basically spun him out. And it wrecked 80% of the field. I think four or five cars got out of it in one piece, but everybody else had damage in an exhibition race. So after he's sitting on pit road in the kind of weather delay, they show him the replays. Like, you know, his first thought was, you know, I think he came over on me. And then as he's literally watching the replay, he's like, yeah, that's a racing thing. It's like, it so wasn't. You basically hooked the guy in front of the entire field and caused millions of dollars in damage for a win in an exhibition race. I mean, I guess if you're not out there to win, then what's the point? However, there are better ways to do it than wrecking the entire field in the process and throwing a bunch of money down the drain. And it was very frustrating for me to watch that highlight and for him to go, yeah, you know, it was just a racing deal. So I'm going to pitfall Jimmy Johnson this week and say that, you know, poor move. And I think you'll get your karma there on Sunday. I think maybe another driver is going to be out for some retribution.
Yeah, it was embarrassing. I think Jess is also NASCAR related, so I'm going to let her go next.
I got kind of two, I guess. I'm gonna pre-pitfall. I'm gonna pre-pitfall for the Daytona race that's coming up because, well, as you just heard, there was the big one, so to say. So it's just, you know, going to be a matter of how many laps are they going to run before they get to the big one. And it's just such a, well, it's just such a waste, honestly. I don't know. I just don't understand why that's like appealing to people because, you know, three people finish the race. Like, that's just dumb. but then I also want to bring this up just because I thought it was hilarious that our trusty host Mike did not know this. So in case you don't know, I'm going to let everybody know now. So everybody knows how I sign off the episodes with the keep your lug nuts tight. And I was kind of just joking about NASCAR in general earlier this evening, and I said something about them cheating on their lug nuts to begin with, and Mike did not get the reference. In case you do not know, NASCAR glues their lug nuts to their wheels before pit stops so they don't lose them. So that's my cheating on the lug nuts thing, and so just NASCAR. That's my pitfall. Just NASCAR.
Oh, to be fair to Mike, I didn't know either, to be honest.
Thank you.
Okay, well, you both didn't know then. So probably that means a lot of people don't know, especially people who listen to us because, you know, they're usually more on the IndyCar side of things. So now you all know that NASCAR cheats on their lug nuts.
Jess, as I've explained to you many times after I do Stump the Host, in your defense, that your brain is too busy being awesome. My brain has no time for any sort of NASCAR capacity. It's just, I only got limited brain power on my side here. I cannot be wasting the limited function I have to begin with on memorizing stupid NASCAR crap.
What he said. moving on, I'm going to deviate from NASCAR so we don't all destroy NASCAR at once. I am going to pitfall Team Williams for, I believe it was Claire Williams' comments when they did their livery announcement. First off, not a huge fan of the livery, but it's really not that bad. But she said in the article that teams that have, you know, alliances, whether it be Toro Rosso and Red Bull or, you know, whatever, are the reason that they slipped back to P10 in the Constructors' Championship last year.
Shut up. She said that?
That probably was one of the reasons we slipped back to P10 last year, based on the work going on between certain teams. I mean, no offense, Claire. If your team put in, like, any work, you probably would have not fallen back to P10. But it's obvious that Williams has completely lost focus. I'm just going to leave it as, because I don't know the right word. And similar to how Matt laughed, I actually started laughing in the media center earlier when I read this article, because I thought I was seeing something incorrectly and stepped away from my computer and came back and still read the same thing. So I am going to pitfall Claire Williams for being slightly delusional. Yes, maybe it contributed to it, but you don't go from, you know, what were they, P4, P5-ish, in the Constructors' Championship to the very bottom without screwing many things up. It's not just because of other teams. So, yeah, I'm going to leave it at that. I don't know if anybody else has any thoughts.
Three thoughts on that.
Yeah.
First off, God bless Mercedes' junior team in Formula One and all the information that they give them. Oh, wait, that's right. They don't have one. Two, the Williams livery is hideous. Oh, God, terrible. Three, I wonder what 2018 Claire Williams was thinking. We need to improve and make our situation better. So I know we're going to hire Lance Stroll and Sergei Sorokin. That's really going to help our progress going forward. I'll give them credit. Their lineup this year with Russell and Kubica, that is so much better. However, and I think they got rid of that idiot who was running the technical department that they brought in from McLaren.
I think you're right. I forget.
Drawing a blank. Patty Lowe? No, I can't remember. But yes, I do think they're going to do better. However, this was the first time I heard those comments, so I could not help but laugh at the just like you did in the media center. I don't know if Jess has thoughts on that.
Yeah, no, I think the word delusional sums it up very well.
The episode is going to be titled Claire Williams, Delusional. And it's going to have nothing to do with 99% of the episode. On that note, everybody, Patreon subscribers and non-Patreon subscribers, thank you for listening to another week. We are now officially pretty much in IndyCar season with preseason testing underway. So things should start to get exciting for the next handful of months, which I'm sure we're all very excited about. And with that, I will let Jess sign it off.
And guys, don't cheat, but keep your lug nuts tight.
The music for this week's episode was done by Impulse Studios and produced by Podcast Elite Productions. Web design courtesy of A30.com.